Blog Talk Radio.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to David Preval, who starred in the early days of The Sopranos as mob boss Richie Aprile. We'll talk today about his theater work in Henry Jaglom's new play, 45 Minutes from Broadway. Stick around.
Hey, did you know that you can listen to the latest Mr. Media on your phone with the Stitcher app? Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. Mr. Media is on demand and on the go with Stitcher. Download Stitcher for your phone today. Get the free download at Stitcher.com. That's Stitcher.com.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Come on, check out the site. There's hundreds and hundreds of interviews there. The show is brought to you today by ThePartyAuthority.us. Planning a wedding, mitzvah, or corporate event? For any and all occasions, call The Party Authority nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJS. That's 1-800-342-5357, where one call does it all. So where was I before the commercial? Oh, yeah. Mr. Media is recorded live from the new media capital of the world and the place where Joseph Ganascalli, who played Vito Spadafori, nephew of Richie Aprile on The Sopranos, unfortunately spent last night in jail on a DUI charge, Tampa Bay, Florida. Richie Aprile was crazy. Not gangster or organized crime crazy, but nuts. Way over the top, barely functioning in society, nuts. And of all the characters ever invented on HBO's long-running mobster drama, The Sopranos, Aprile, played brilliantly by actor David Preval during season 2, was the only one that genuinely scared me with his anger and quick-to-violence temper. Tony Soprano, of course, was menacing, as were many of the guys on his crew and those of the New York families, but the portrayal of Aprile by Preval was soul-rattling, for me at least. So just to give you a taste and remind you of what that sounded like, check out this exchange.
How'd you get in here?
Same as you, through the front door.
Hi, Rich.
Hi, Rich.
You want some locks? I got some nice fresh locks.
You got some fucking balls, you know that?
I don't.
I should stab you in the fucking eye.
Hey, come on, Richie.
Get your hand off of me. I'll put one in your head.
Don't fucking threaten me, Richie.
I'm threatening you. I got a hot arm for you already. Give me a reason.
Listen, you fucking embarrass you. I'm sorry now. I want to talk. I shut him the fuck down. He comes here, and he sticks it up my ass. What's that got to do with you disrespecting my game?
Like you wouldn't do anything different.
You're fucking right.
No, Tony, I'm getting sick of this holier than thou act. And I'm not the only one.
Oh, really? Well, if anybody wants to make a move.
Come on, Tony. Don't get so fucking dramatic. All I'm saying is sometimes you act like you're in a different business. Now send that little prick out so I can talk to him.
No.
You realize this motherless fuck is into me for over 8 large? He's got money to play here. Let him pay me my money. Send him out.
You go home, Richie. This ain't gonna happen on one of my plays.
Those were the days, huh? As for the real David Preval, well, he first came to wide notice in Martin Scorsese's Mean Streets and has a role upcoming opposite Ving Rhames in Robert Townsend's Sonny Liston biopic, Phantom Punch. I'm very curious to find out what he's really like. What I do know is that he's starring alongside Tana Frederick and Karen Black in Henry Jaglom's new play, 45 Minutes from Broadway, now running through late July at the Edgemar Center for the Arts in Santa Monica, California. You can order tickets online at edgemarcenter.org. David Preval, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hello, Robert, Bob, Bob,
and Bob. Bob's good.
I haven't heard that scene in, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 years, something like that.
You know, it's
they
funny
never
when I went.
Play that scene. That's interesting that you chose that.
We have a different operating standard here, at least so far. You know, David, I went looking for clips of you and James Gandolfini, and all of them were titled "Confrontation, Confrontation, Another Confrontation."
Yeah, how long can you last on a series with confrontation, confrontation, confrontation? Something's got to give, you know. So, right, on a series or anywhere, in a marriage, on a basketball court, confrontation.
Now, I suspect I'm not the first person to say that I found Richie possibly the most frightening of all the Sopranos characters ever.
No, you're not. At the risk of, I've heard it a lot, many
times. Yeah.
There are volumes of books written about this.
Where does that guy come from for you? I mean, was that a natural thing to fall into, or was that the real acting?
It's well, for any actor, there's a part, for any of us, forget about actors, for any of us, there's that part of us that, oh, if we reach down deep enough and if we're honest enough and willing enough, we'll find the rage within us. It takes actors who are masochistic enough to want to really drain it up and give themselves ulcers and by doing so. But in all of us, there's that rage that if we're fortunate enough to be in the world that allows us to reveal that, exercise that, whatever you want to call it, well, acting gives us the opportunity. But that's the answer to that question. Is that an answer?
Yeah, it was an answer, yeah. I kind of wondered, I mean, had you ever known people like that? Because here's the thing. I understand what you're saying. There's acting and there's reaching inside. But some of these characters on that show, particularly yours, it almost seems like you would have to have seen that level of anger or menace, or even if you saw it on screen somewhere, to pull that out of yourself.
That's right.
If you're not,
you just
yeah.
said it. I've seen it on screen. Have you ever seen Cagney in a lot of things he's done? I mean, he's one of my acting heroes.
Public Enemy.
In Public Enemy. Frightening to watch.
Yeah.
For me, Cagney's performance in that, and the American Gangster, let's be specific here, the Jesse James, you know, the character that we sort of romanticized over the years. I want to be very specific about what particular form of rage we're talking about, because there's other forms of rage I'd rather have institutionalized than be on the screen or anywhere else. Because that kind of rage theatricalizes itself. Have I ever? Well, I'm born, raised in Brooklyn, New York. Low-income area, rough times, and there were tough guys on the street. So, yes, of course, I have that frame of reference. And, yes, of course, I've seen some pretty tough guys in my life who scared me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess some way or another, we all ingest our environment and it becomes part of us. And if you're an actor, then it's a gift to have been exposed to that kind of... So, yes, the answer is yes, I've been exposed, of course, in my personal life, not intimately, from afar, thank goodness. But, yeah, did have some kind of... Social
was that a role that came to you... because of another role you had played, or was it? I mean, I know you were in Mean Streets, but that was, that's a long time difference there.
I mean, Mean Streets was young and
right.
He was a sweet guy. Right after that, I played a rabbi. Did you know that?
Yes.
On Western. Oh, okay. And what happened is because of, you know, Sopranos is still, in fact, on the air on A&E. People see it every day. It gets a new audience every day, and it continues. So there are people I meet or see me who have never seen me work, other than Richie April, or they have, but they don't connect the two. You know, so they think, yeah, this guy must be a killer. You know. But no, it was just a character. It was a job to do, and I'm proud of it. And, it's great to have been part of a phenomena. Yesterday, I found out that the most upsetting or terrifying or blah blah whatever the phrase they used in the history of television was Richie's murder, the most shocking. rated number 13 in the history of television, or something like that. Mm. Somebody told me that yesterday. Well, whatever that means.
Now, exits on that show. Now, you were in season 2, so it was a little early in the run, but exits on that show were always memorable. I think there was someone who left the show with his head in a bowling ball bag.
Joe Pantaleone.
Yeah. Do you remember when you learned that you would be exiting the show and saw that script?
Yeah, I was so upset, so disappointed. I was hoping I'd get a reprieve, is exactly what I said to Mr. David Chase when he called me to tell me you got the A. Well, there's nowhere else we can go and blah, blah, blah. But since he has told me personally and in print that it was me and Vinny Pastor, Big Pussy, was the most difficult decision I've ever had to make as on the show or in his writing career, his television writing career, to kill off those two characters. So, but yeah, I was just so disappointed. I love the show, like everybody else in the world. I love being a part of it, and... yeah, I sat in my little hovel in Manhattan and cried in my beer.
Oh my God!
You know,
I'm feeling sad
like
for Richard April.
I say things like this, and I once said something like this many years ago to a reporter from the New York Times, and he asked me, "What do actors do between jobs?" And I said, "Well, we sit around and cry a lot." And the title of the interview was Tears After 14 Years. That's not what I meant at all. I'm sort of kidding, you know. It was a joke. I didn't get it. Well, you sit around and you mope a lot and you wait for the phone to ring. You know what you do. Mm. Actors when they're out of work. And so, yes, the answer to that was I was devastated.
At least... You did go out in a memorable way. Did you, when you read it on paper, did you realize how memorable that was going to be?
No. I thought it was about as clever as you can get, because I didn't think anybody else in that group could get them, or smart enough to get them, at least. And I thought, why, you know, having them go out in that way was just genius. As usual, for Mr. Chase.
it was a horrifying scene to watch. I mean, just, oh my, you know, you thought, I remember thinking, and I had to really think back on this, I remember thinking during second season, how will they ever resolve this? Because Richie is constantly challenging and confronting, as we talked about before, Tony's authority on everything. And while it's great drama, it just seemed like, how could you sustain that for years
of
to come?
Obviously,
you couldn't.
No, you couldn't. Or else it just becomes redundant, or else it just becomes a buck without a bite. And well, there they go, staring at each other again. So what? No, you couldn't. But there was some rumor about HBO wanting to send Creel to Philadelphia to start his own crew and visit and have kind of Montague Capulet, I don't know, whatever analogy, Shakespearean analogy you want to use, that he starts his own family neighboring Philadelphia, and there was that rumor. Shows up, they both show up every once in a while, and something like that, and have a little clash and go back to their.
That would that fort. Would have been fun.
Yeah. But hey, listen, I think David has a movie or something in him, not Sopranos, but something that's wonderful, and I'm hoping that maybe I'll come in and have another reading for him. A lot of years between jobs. But no, I'm anyway, we're supposed to be talking about 45 Minutes to Broadway, actually.
Oh, we're gonna come to that. I have, and before we do that, I have one more clip I want to play. This is, again, another confrontation between character Richie Aprile, played by David Preval, who we're talking to right now, and James Gandolfini as Tony Soprano. Listen to this, folks.
Come on, the bar. Gee, you got a minute?
Jesus Christ, let me get a drink.
Right? we'll grab a waiter. Come on. Excuse me, lady.
Have you met Helen Ballone? Hi, Jan Soprano. Nice to meet you, Jan.
Gunny Bluff? What?
Well, no, Cole.
Well, you don't keep it on you. I gotta go to the deli in Nutley.
Tony.
You don't sell that shit along those routes. You understand me?
I'm working with Junior on this.
I don't give a shit if you're working with Walmart. Knock it the fuck off.
I'm trying to earn here. We're saving for a house.
You got enough in your plate just picking up garbage.
Not if you and that fucking association and that cocksucker Barone don't let me expand.
Are you fucking still on or what? After 5 years, the cops are finally leaving garbage alone. A drug bust on one of those routes is a different story. You got the FBI, the DEA, all those fucking pricks are going to be breathing down our necks again.
Coke. What is the big deal?
You're my uncle. You want to deal drugs, it's your business. You do it on association garbage routes, it's my fucking business. It stops today. You got it? Don't give me your fucking Manson lamps. Just fucking stop. Another thing, don't tip a truck on a problem customer. You know, I fucking hate the way you make me fucking ride you. Now get the fuck out of here.
I love the line about the Manson lamps.
I have a picture of that scene in my office.
Do you really?
Yeah. Amazing you chose that. I thought so. Yeah. I have a photograph of Jimmy and I. The attitude of the scene was captioned in a photograph. Wow, terrific. Hmm. Yep.
What can you tell us about playing opposite him and his presence on the set?
Dedicated, committed, concentrated. A concentration that for me as an actor, is just to have that around me is nourishing and just inspiring. He's just a sweet man, good man. And a very funny guy.
Funny guy, see?
Yeah, terrific.
Gandolfini is a funny guy.
Right. And what I'm looking forward to when they find a comedy for him to do, it's going to be an enormous hit if it's right. He's a very funny man. Naturally funny guy. And I'd love to do a comedy with him. I've sort of not lost touch. Well, yeah, I guess lost touch. You know, I live out in L.A., and those guys are diehard New Yorkers. They stay there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd love to do a comedy with them. Oh, he's doing a comedy. What the hell am I saying?
He's on Broadway, isn't he?
No,
for HBO, okay.
He left that, and he's now on HBO doing a half-hour sitcom. I'm just saying something he's doing already. Okay. He's doing
there you
comedy.
Go. Well, all right. Let's now. Yes, I was just going to say you're in Henry Jaglom's new play, 45 Minutes from Broadway. It's at the Edgemar Center for the Arts in Santa Monica, California. But this is not your first time working with Jaglom material.
No. This is I did a movie a few years ago titled Hollywood Dreams, which I love a lot. I love the character. I love the movie. Then did another movie for him, smaller role. Then did yet another that's about to be released and about to do another movie based on the play. So this is my fourth movie with him. Fourth movie, one play. And we were running 8 months with an amazing cast, Tana Frederick, great actress, been in all three of his movies. He's his leading lady. Karen Black is in the play now. Mm-hmm. Deck Heller, David Garver, and Julie Davis, who just has had a movie released recently. She directed a movie called Finding Bliss. It's a group of, he's assembled a group of really gifted people, actors, directors on stage, and we've been running for 8 months. Took a 3-week break.
I was going to say, he seems very committed to the people who work with him. I mean, you guys work with him, right?
Yeah. He tries to keep his ensemble tight and going. And, Henry has, I guess, sort of his own Mercury players. Orson Welles, of course, you know that. His film hero who had his Mercury players, and I think Henry has kind of likened himself to that kind of ensemble philosophy.
Tell us a little bit about your character in 45 Minutes from Broadway.
Larry, dear Larry, Larry Cooper, he's an actor. He's an actor who works in dinner theater. Times are not great. His career has been, he never got that big shot. That's a line out of the play. He started out with guys like Bob De Niro and Dusty Hoffman, but never got that big break. And it's kind of the comic relief of the play, actually. I have a monologue in the play that talks about how an actor knows how to actors who know how to make a play revolve around them. It's a monologue I have in the play, so I don't want to sound like my character right now. It is not the major character in the play, but he's the comic relief, and it is an ensemble piece, and we all have our moments on stage, and it's just people come in to the theater saying, God, I'm looking at my family tonight. It's a quirky theater family, a real sweet, eccentric, loving family, and a daughter who has left the fold to go out to the real world. We call them civilians, people not in the business, to marry a civilian, and she's bringing him home to meet the family, and that's the event, the civilian. And what conspires is something lovely.
Now, Tana Frederick and Karen Black have both been on the show with me in the last month or two, and they both talked about. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I said that's all.
Oh, yeah, and they both talked about Henry Jaglom's wonderful ear for women and women characters.
Yeah.
But I was kind of curious how you see his writing for men.
I think that he's evolving. I think he's inviting men into his writing more and more. And the little I know about Henry and his relationship with his father, who's a very powerful man, his father, I think things are changing for him. And his last movie, Queen of the Lot, there's a very, very powerful man character Jack Heller plays in that movie. That's a central figure in that movie, and the true patriarch of a family. So I think he's moving in that area now. So, but I do agree. Yeah, he's written for women. He's their writer.
Yeah.
Films.
Well, last question before we run out of time. You have a movie. Now you tell me where it's at. Phantom Punch with Ving Rhames. The
I think it just it's about to be released or got a release, and I got to see it once. I'm a boxing fan, so I love films on sports and boxing, and I think it's a real insight into what this great heavyweight champion was about. This movie, I don't quite know what the release plans are, so I'm not going to talk about it. I really don't know. I'm not involved with the movie.
Okay. Well, maybe
I did
maybe
my job, and that was it.
Maybe once it gets a release, we can have the opportunity to talk about that in some detail.
Yeah. Well, I have my own movie that I'm working on. I've shot and did, and maybe we could talk about that someday.
Okay.
The release. Okay.
Well, I'd be delighted to have you back. And, folks, you can see David Preval live on stage at the Edgemar Center for the Arts in Santa Monica, California, through, I believe, late July.
We're going to September 17th.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's news to me. Great.
Yeah.
So you have plenty of time all summer. Order tickets and get more information online at edgemarcenter.org. And, of course, you can order the entire second season of The Sopranos, in which Preval's character is featured, at mrmedia.com. David, it was a great pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much for making the time.
Good talking to you, Bob. Take care.
Take care.
Have a great day. Bye.
You too. And folks, for more original interviews with your favorite TV and film stars, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media radio listeners. Go to audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia for your free audiobook. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. And you can follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, twitter.com/andelman, or on Facebook, just search Mr. Media Interviews. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.